Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Good to have you with us, everybody. It's March 4th, 2013. Man, this year's off to the races. We're doing real well as an industry. We're surviving the sequester. How about that? At least there's nothing negative yet. I'm about ready to go jump on an airplane and fly up to Nashville today, so we'll find out how the lines are at the airport. I'll have to get Alice's report. She flies around as much as I do. But anyway, we appreciate you being with us this day, March 4th, Monday. Good to have you on the part of being part of the broadcast. We see people dialing in from all over the country. Special shout out to Jan Wetzel. She is down somewhere in Florida doing some. You know, if you live in Michigan, I guess where are you going to go? You're going to go somewhere. So definitely head on out. Florida's a great place to go. In fact, I'm heading there this week. We're starting spring break. Alice Alvey will be hosting the radio program next week. I love it when Alice hosts it. I dial in wherever I'm at. Listen to the broadcast like one of the regular listeners, and I just love Alice's giggly energy and information. It comes across with such a great attitude, and we appreciate it. We are just so excited to have with us a little bit later in the Hot Topic segment, Paul Mallow. Paul Mallow is no stranger to the industry. He is now with Inside Mortgage Finance. He wrote for years for National Mortgage Professional. He's also the author of the book Chain of Blame, How Wall Street Caused the Mortgage and Credit Crisis. We'll talk more about all that later. But we're excited to have Paul Mallow be a part of the program a little bit later in the broadcast. Appreciate you again tuning in and telling others about the broadcast. And a special thank you to our sponsors, United Guarantees out there. It's their 50th anniversary. They've got something that I thought was really interesting. I was cruising around on their website, and they have something called a performance premium that gives you, the mortgage company, an opportunity to it's a pricing option that allows it, you know, so many MI companies have a one-size-fits-all mortgage premium pricing. These guys actually have a ability to set a performance premium into that. So it is it just gives them a real advantage. If you have not gotten hold of United Guarantee, I encourage you to reach out to your representative, get a hold of them. Also, if you want to go click on their website, go to our website, lickinonlending.com. Click on the right-hand side of the email, the website. You'll see it. I'm looking at it right now. It's very clear, their website, their logo. Click on it, and it'll take you right into their website. So go to lickinonlending.com. Click on the link that is right there, their logo, their image on the right-hand side of the screen. And check out all that the United Guarantee has in the private mortgage insurance arena. So good to have them as sponsors. Also, Alamode, great to have them. We appreciate you being a part of the broadcast as much as anything. Joe Farr is out traveling. He's actually at a Lenders One conference in Florida. He flies home. I head out to there. He said it was freezing there today. So let's get an update from Joe. He called me a little bit earlier today, and we recorded the following.
Well, let's talk about today. So far, there's been no economic news coming out today, and I guess it's the day after the day the sequester went into place, so it's kind of good to know that not much is happening.
That is good.
MBS prices are down a couple 30 seconds, and that's it.
Yeah. Well, that is good to know, because a lot of people are wondering, what could this mean? So at this point, no news is good. Good news. No reaction.
It's not
is good
in the
news.
Mortgage market.
Yeah, at least not in the mortgage market. Yeah, exactly. So what? Let's talk about last week a little bit.
Well, you know, last week while we were on the air, we talked a bit about the Italian elections, the Italian elections had caused the market to improve substantially during the day, but prices just kept improving. I think one of the bigger correspondents issued three favorable price changes on Monday.
Yeah.
By the end of the day, MBS prices had improved to about a half a point higher than where they ended the Friday before, and that was off of being down, I think, 7:30 seconds early in the day. So it was a very substantial improvement in prices on Monday. And, you know, from then, there was a little bit up and down in the market, bounced around a little bit, but really not any big movement. So MBS prices eventually ended the week up about half a point, and so mortgage rates improved a little bit. And during the week, the news that came out, the economic news that came out, was generally pretty good. The other big event during the week was Bernanke before Congress, and he really didn't say anything that surprised the market too much. I guess one thing you could take away from his comments was that he reiterated support for, you know, continuing the MBS purchase program as long as necessary, and continues to define that based on the unemployment rate. So, you know, during the week, let's look at the economic news that came out during the week. It was, like I said, generally pretty good, especially the housing data.
Yeah, the housing data would remain strong.
New home sales were the highest level since July of 08, and pending home sales jumped to the highest level since April 2010, which we'll remember that was the first conclusion of the home buyer tax credit. So there's a lot of distortion in the market going into that month. But so very positive things in the housing market from those two measures. Consumer confidence and consumer sentiment were both better than last month, better than expected, showing significant improvement. So that was all good. And jobless claims were low. PCE, which is one of the Fed's, well, the Fed's, you know, preferred measure of inflation, came in at a very low level. I think it rose on the month at 0.1%, and I don't remember what the annual rate was, but it was well less than 2%. So inflation remains a non-concern, a non-factor. And then if we look toward this week, you know, the big event this week, Dave, is going to be the payrolls report that comes out on Friday. Consensus is for 165,000 jobs, so better than last month, and unemployment rate to remain at 7.9%. So we'll see if that holds up. Before then, we'll get the ISM Services Index. Comes out tomorrow. It's always it's not as big a report as the ISM Index, which came out on Friday, but the ISM Services is important. Jobless claims on Thursday, given the jobs report coming out right thereafter, and during the week we have a number of European central banks are meeting. That Monday's election results reminded us that Europe is still an issue.
Still in play.
The European central banks meet. We'll see what impact they might have on the U.S. market.
Well, I tell you, all eyes will begin to turn back to Europe, especially after the election, and see what there's just so much to pay attention to. And folks, if you're trying to stay on top of the market by just reading headlines and things like that, it's almost impossible with so much going on globally, here locally, and you really need a service like MBS Quote Line. Joe Farr, appreciate you taking time to join us here today, and enjoy your time in Florida. Hopefully you'll be back. Safe travels to you, my friend.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Folks, we'll be right back after this brief word.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com. MBSQuoteLine.com. 646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Good to have you back with us. A regular to the broadcast, someone that we've all come to enjoy, and just really appreciate her reports. It's Alice Alvia, president of Mortgage U. Folks, if you want someone to help you in training and just guide you through all that's going on from a regulatory standpoint, you cannot get anyone better than Alice Alvey. Alice, good to have you on the broadcast. Appreciate it so much. Are you traveling as well, or are you actually home this week?
Well, I'm actually in Michigan doing training for Flagstar, so I like having big companies in my backyard. It helps with the travel.
I'm sure your husband likes it home with you being home a little more as well.
Yeah.
Well, what do you got for us today, Alice?
Well, actually, FHA has been in the headlines a lot lately, and I just want to make sure everybody is get the most updated information with where we are with FHA, and I can't wait to talk with Paul a little bit more about that in our special guest segment later today, because I know they certainly have lots of inside scoop on this. So we do have House Bill 264 that's considered the FHA Enhanced Oversight Act of 2013. You might remember from last year's reporting and years over the last couple of years, Congress has tried to give FHA some more strengthening power to be able to do some things to help mitigate their risks and make sure the fund stays solvent. This particular act is just simply focused on if FHA is in trouble, an annual report isn't enough. We need to have an actuarial report semi-annually. So I guess that just means everybody will be on the hot seat more often throughout the course of the year. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't stand much of a chance of getting approved, but we'll see what happens. So Dave Stevens, president of MBA, did testify February 28th. His testimony was called Addressing FHA's Financial Condition and Program Challenges. And this was part two. And I really think it's extremely valuable for everyone to read this. Some of you might kind of go, oh, gosh, I don't know if I can handle all those numbers, right? But my highlights from his report, I think, are things that everybody should be aware of when you have to communicate and feel comfortable about what is really going on with the fund. I've got about 60 loan officers today, and they care about the fund, right? Because FHA is a bread and butter product. So Mr. Stevens did a great job of explaining, of course, to everyone there about FHA's countercyclical role, and obviously gets into the weeds of explaining, what really is the negative economic value compared to the actuarial review. And the reality is that what he mentioned was that what's important is the findings do not mean that FHA has insufficient cash to pay insurance claims, a current operating deficit, or will need to immediately draw funds from the Treasury. So let me say that again. It's important that the findings are not saying FHA will immediately need to take funds from the Treasury. And I think that's what starts to hit the news, is people go, oh, my gosh, is FHA the next bailout?
Right.
Certainly there's some caution, but I think that his information is solid to be able to support that it's not imminent. FHA does have some ability, if we give them the authority, to be able to get things under control. So what he referenced, though, in terms of those of us who are dealing with products, I think you are going to see some potential for increased down payment requirements for the lower credit scores. We definitely may see that it's an advantage for FHA to implement a two-month reserve requirement. Definitely changing maximum loan-to-values for the 95 for loan amounts that are above the 625.5. So, and then one of the things I found interesting in this testimony was that FHA should be clearly a safe harbor under QM and not be subject to the potential, what I keep calling the yellow zone, right? I'm still okay, but I'm in this high-priced mortgage loan that now triggers rebuttable presumption of compliance. So we get FHA to be a totally green QM product, and I really liked that idea. So that's my two cents right now, Dave, with what's going on. The main thing seems to be making sure that we can get some legislation through that will help FHA, and we should expect more underwriting changes coming up in the future to make sure that the fund can stay, solvent.
When you look at the FHA and you listen to David's comments and you read the what you've read on that, I wanted to go back and listen to it and read it. David Stevens, I were Facebook messaging. He was sending out a Facebook message that he was going to be doing this, and so I had a chance to add some comments to him and encourage him on that. But do you think that, Alice, did you get the impression that he had an impact, that they understand the importance of this FHA program?
I don't know. That's a great question for Paul, since, they've got reporters, on the scene there who can ask those types of questions. I think his message should have an impact because it's well-founded. They should see that they don't have to have some kind of panic reaction now other than give FHA the tools it needs.
Right. That's
instead
it.
Of trying to kind of clamp down in areas that don't make any sense.
Absolutely. I've had that to give them the authority, give them the power. Understand that we went through, I like David Stevens' quote, a bit of a 500-year flood. And to sit and And to say that they were in a place, that's just not right. Well, we'll have Paul later on in the broadcast. Exciting to get his comments on this. I see he just dialed into the switchboard. We'll be having him on a little bit later, folks. Alice, first of all, I want to say thank you so much for while you're out training, doing what you're doing, taking the time to be here with us is so much appreciated. Thank you so much, Alice.
You're welcome.
Folks, we'll be right back with Tony Garitano giving us an update on some technology stuff, and then off to Paul Mollo just a little bit later. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin.
Good to have you with us. So many of you say, you know what, I tried to dial it at the top of the program and I missed comments from Alice. You know, you can go to our website, lickitonlending.com, L-Y-K-K-E-N, onlending.com. You can go to the broadcast, listen to it on a streaming basis anytime, or for your convenience, download it to your favorite media, your iPhone, your Google phone, whatever phone you have. All the options we have today, it's just amazing. But you can download it and listen to it at your convenience. So we've got people that download and tell me we listen to the broadcast over and over and over to try to just get down all that's happening. And a lot of it's what Alice has for us. Tony Garitano, good to have you on the broadcast. We've got one of your old associates coming up here in just a little bit, Paul Mollo. I'm so looking forward to that interview. But it's good to have you here with us, Tony.
Thank you for having me, and I'm also very excited to hear from Paul. I think he's a wonderful guy. He's a great reporter, and I really enjoyed working with him at Source Media, and I cannot say enough good things about him. So I think he's going to be great.
He's definitely one of the guys wearing the white hat in our industry, trying to help us see what's going on, and I always like how he writes as I do use. But let's talk about these new regulations, Tony, and let's talk about the impact they're having on technology, specifically spending this year. They have got to be pounding in some serious dollars to keep current. What say you?
They are, Dave. I mean, I came across these two research reports that I wanted to share with you in terms of technology spending. And to your point, I mean, lenders are spending a lot on technology this year because of compliance and other reasons. According to IDC Financial Insights, they expect North American financial institutions to spend $57 billion on technology this year.
$57 billion in new technology this year.
This year. And also, Raymond James, they predict that, just to put this into context for you, North American bank IT spending will continue to grow, and as compared to last year, it will be up 3.1% this year.
Wow. You know, it's not surprising, Tony. I mean, you look at all that's going on there. And it really begs the question, are we going to continue to see a lot of consolidation within this? A new company's got to be a real struggle to come into a market like this with so much. Or, you know, is there room for new technology players to come in? Or are we just going to see consolidation amongst the guys that have been here for a while?
I think we are going to see a lot of consolidation among the guys that have been in the space for a while. I do think, though, that you are going to see some of the technology vendors that are currently in the space be a little bit more innovative than they would normally.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're spending a lot of money to update their systems for this compliance rule or that compliance rule. And lenders are very responsive to new technology because they realize that they're going to be inundated with these rules. So if I'm a vendor and I'm spending the money already, I am going to be doing something really neat and cool to get that lender in bed with me.
Interesting. So you do see new technologies coming online here in 2013 then?
I'm not sure if they're totally new technologies, Dave, but I do see technology vendors and lenders alike using technology in new ways.
Now that's interesting. I can't wait. We got to get you back. Well, you're here. Hopefully, you'll be here next week. I'm going to be gone next week, Tony, but hopefully you can join Alice when she's hosting the program next week. We're on spring break, so but I'd love to get more insights into all of this. Appreciate you taking time out of your busy day to come out and be with us and share some of your thoughts. Again, folks, you can go off to progressinlending.com, progressinlending.com. Get all the skinny. And if you are not up signed up for Tony's newsletter that he sends out, his update, his blog that he sends out each day on everything technology, you should get it. I encourage it very, very much. Tony, thank you so much for being with us. Look forward to talking to you again, hopefully next week and soon. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dave.
Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel's Trot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel's Trot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel's Trot can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel's Trot represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel's Trot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel's Trot, the single source solution for your quality control needs. And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lickin' on Lending Show.
Good to have you back with us. I'm looking up and down the switchboard here. As many of you are dialed in, listening to the broadcast live from a phone line somewhere. Also, thousands of others are just dialed in and connected with us via their computers. But I see people from all over the country. I want to say thank you to all of you who are dialing in from all four corners of the country and everywhere in between. Really appreciate you making this a part of your information gathering service as you look at this industry and consider it. There's many wonderful resources out there, but our next guest, Paul Mollo, who is with us and going to be a part of us, is now part of Inside Mortgage Finance. He was previously the executive editor for National Mortgage News, author of the book What We're Hearing, and the Internet. There's a new Internet blog out there. Can't wait for Paul to get in and talk about that. He is working with Guy Sakala. There's no question that Guy's got probably one of the most amazing, detailed amount of data that Guy puts out in the Inside Mortgage Finance. He's been putting out for years. And I had the privilege of sitting down in Washington, D.C. with Paul and Guy and talking about what's going on. And from that moment on, I go, I got to get Paul on the broadcast. And I'm so thrilled to have him here. Paul, good to have you on the broadcast here.
Good. Thanks for having me, David.
I appreciate it. Be sure to say hi to Guy before we get a chance to go too far in the broadcast. There's so much to talk about.
Sure.
You've written a couple of books I want to talk about, and I want to open up and make sure everyone is aware of those books. You, in 2008, you wrote The Chain of Blame, How Wall Street Caused the Mortgage and Credit Crisis. And then also you wrote a book of The Inside Job, The Looting of America's Savings and Loans. And you've written a lot of critical stuff over the many, many years that you've been doing it. How many years has it been, Paul?
Too many.
Too many.
Well, no, actually, it was, you know, Chain of Blame came out in 2008. Inside Job came out, I think it was about 17 years earlier. So I figured 17 years from 2008, I'll be writing my final book and retiring.
No.
You know, it's funny, though. You know, listen, they were both huge scandals. And when the S&L crisis came along, you know, in the late 1980s, you know, people were blown away by the cost of that. And people who are veterans of this industry might recall that that crisis cost the federal government $150 billion, which, you know, is nothing compared to what happened 5 years ago. You know,
each crisis
that what?
Yeah, go ahead.
No, the crisis we had in 87, the S&L crisis, you know, that was really tied more to commercial real estate speculation,
right,
whereas this one was tied to housing, and people thought that, you know, you could never have a financial meltdown in our housing market, and then lo and behold, we did.
Well, yeah, we started looking at what we were doing back then. And you've been an observer. You've been reporting on this for years. And we got Alice Alvey on the phone. I'm going to bring her in just a little bit later. And I'm just so excited about this dialogue. And we don't have any talking points. A lot of times, folks, when we have guests on, we get all these talking points and we kind of organize it and get it down. Well, Paul, I have a million things I want to ask the guy, because you sit and think about it, listeners. This gentleman has been sitting and watching it. We've been participating in it. We get caught up on it. Paul has got one of the most unique perspectives. And, Paul, you really have a brilliant writing style, as Tony said earlier. Very complimentary of you. And I know you guys work together. But the reality is you have a way of writing that brings it out, and you somehow bring it out in a way that reflects some of my reactionary emotions that I have, as well as just reporting it fairly objectively. So I like how you mix it up there. But let's talk about some of the stories that you're – well, first of all, let's talk about what you're doing right now with Guy Sakala there at Inside Mortgage Finance. I want to make sure everyone understands what
Guy
you're doing right now.
Guy brought me on board in mid-December, and we launched a web daily. It's called IMF News, and it's available at imfnews.com. I'm supposed to say that 20 times, imfnews.com. But that's our website. We're daily. We have 4 or 5 stories a day. And a bunch of, and right after that, 4 or 5 what we call short takes.
Right.
And then on Fridays, we have the column that most people in the industry know called What We're Hearing, which is a hodgepodge of gossip, innuendo, and you know, scoops that we have. We also run some data stories. We have our lead editor, John Bancroft, runs a lot of the data analysis.
Yes.
And he comes up with some great findings with the research that he does. So it's... You know, it's a good mix. National Mortgage News is still out there, and they're a competitor, obviously. And
yep.
I'm friends with some good people there, like Brian Collins. So, you know, we're trying to bring a fresh perspective in my reporting and marry it with the data at Inside Mortgage Finance and give the industry something that is what we feel is unique and new, and I hope people check it out.
Well, they should, absolutely. Folks, I want to make sure you got that website again. It's IMS, stands for Inside Mortgage Finance, imfnews.com. Go
Correct.
Check it out. There's a lot there. One of the things I want to talk about, a lot of people, John, I have not met John Brand Bancroft, but I've read what he has done, and there is a lot of analysis that John has done, and I think John's been with Guy for years and years.
I think it's over 15 years, yeah.
Yeah, I think people underestimate the value of the analysis that John does. I mean, a lot of the data that's out there is in the public domain, but we're swimming in data. It's the analysis and how John brings it out. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, he goes through a lot of the call reports. We get a lot of loan level data from Fannie and Freddie, and he tends to bring the stuff out well before anyone, and not too many people actually even look at these numbers. Fannie and Freddie put out their own numbers, and we get different cuts of those numbers, and we also do surveys on a quarterly basis. We do the MI industry. So, you know, we're doing a lot of, you know, interesting looks at data, and data really is the straw that sort of stirs the mortgage drink. If you don't know who's on top in the mortgage industry, if you don't know who's losing market share and gaining market share, and if you don't know if volumes are up or down and delinquencies are up or down, you're really at a huge disadvantage. So John's been doing that for a long time here, and he brings a unique perspective to what we're doing. I mean, we have a fresh story on IMF News today about mortgage profits. John went through all the call report data at the banks and found out that, you know, the mortgage divisions of banks, commercial banks and thrifts, you know, earned a record something like $32 billion in 2012.
Wow.
That's a phenomenal number.
It is.
The year before, they earned $5.2 billion.
Wow.
So think about that. I mean, it's just banks, depositories are making money hand over fist in the mortgage industry, and you know, we're probably not going to see these numbers again. This very well could be, you know,
the
best of times. Yeah, high watermarks.
Yeah.
But you know what? People have been saying for years origination is going to go down. They're going to go down next year, and every year they're proven wrong because, you know, something comes along, either rates drop again and refis take off, and you know, who knows, maybe the purchase business will pick up enough this year to help a lot of lenders get through the year and maybe equal what they produced in 2012.
Well, I look at what John writes, and I'm looking at the article right now. I encourage people to get out to your website again, www.imfnews.com, and read that article. It's rather fascinating. So many banks should be looking at that. We've got more banks calling us right now, and it's on one of the trend lines. And, Paul, you when you talk about what are you waiting for and what are you hearing out there, I mean, you call us regularly. What are you hearing? Look at, I love the phone calls with you, and it's fun sharing to see what's going on. Banks are definitely coming in, big time. Alice right now is at one of the banks that's been in there for a long, long time, Flagstar Training. Alice, do you want to jump in here? Have any questions before we move on to a couple other areas? I got some headlines here I want to talk to Paul about.
Well, thank you, Dave, and thanks, Paul, for being on the show. I'm very excited. I love reading your stuff.
Thank you, Alice.
So, In the purchase world, do you see that ticking up? You know, we've kind of talked about, is there really a boomerang borrower factor out there that we can look forward to for the folks who have, you know, survived the foreclosure market, say, 4 years ago, or went through the foreclosure market, I should say, and now have since survived and maybe coming back into the market to help push up purchases?
Well, you know, I keep hearing from lenders that they're all looking to, you know, they're all looking to make out on purchase this year a lot better than they did last year. But, you know, there's a couple things going on. Let's face it, as everyone listening to this radio program probably knows, credit is still really tight, even though there's been hints and talks here and there about, you know, the GSEs going a little easier or the jumbo guys, you know, loosening their standards. You know, that's the big thing, is everyone knows loan underwriting is tight as ever before. Maybe it's loosening up a little bit. But the other situation here is what's the jobs market? Anyone knows the two things
right.
that drive mortgage purchases are interest rates and jobs. Now, unemployment seems to be stuck at 7.9%. We had the sequester, which went into effect on Friday. In theory, it looks like government workers are going to be hit. They're going to either be, well, most of them will probably be furloughed, meaning they're not laid off outright. But, you know, some of these people are looking at, you know, losing 2, 3, 4 weeks of pay. And depending on what kind of household you are and what your budgeting is, you know, that's a huge blow. You know, in the Washington area here is actually red hot for purchases. I was talking to one of the top realtors last week at Long & Foster. And, you know, they have such an inventory shortage here in the Washington, D.C. area. I think the number they gave me was like inventory's down 40%. I mean, that's just a phenomenal number. There's yeah. not enough homes to buy, and what's happening, supply and demand, home prices are going up. And if you don't have a way to borrow more to fund your purchases, you know, what's going to happen to the purchase market if there's no inventory, or if there's inventory, there's no way to finance people that are, you know, sort of borderline credits, or who maybe have a good credit but they can't prove it, the so-called Alt-A market. So,
well,
you know, there's a lot of – go ahead.
I was just going to say, in Washington, D.C., though, that's such a pocket market. I hope Congress isn't using that as the barometer, because the rest of the country isn't going through that. You know,
no.
We've got pocket markets. I mean, you can't even go by state anymore to define a market.
That's true. I mean, you know, you hear about Phoenix, how loan sales are, I mean, how home sales are way up and prices are up. I mean, every market is different. You know, you still hear that, you know, parts of Southern California, the San Francisco Bay Area, you got huge inventory problems there. So, you know, what do you do? And we hear reports that home builders are doing great again, but there's probably not enough lots for them to buy in hot markets that they can build fast enough. So it sounds like you're going to have a situation where you don't have enough homes to buy, and underwriting standards are so tight, there's not enough mortgage credit. So what's going to happen to some of these red-hot markets?
Well, and then, of course, there's always the appraisal component, too, and all of that.
Yeah, I forgot about that one. That's another problem, is again, people listening to the show know that just because a home, you know, there's a bidding war in a home that was listed for $500,000, it's only been bid up to $575,000. That doesn't mean the appraiser is going to come in and say, okay, you know, it looks good. You know,
right.
That's a problem that's been going on for years.
Yeah.
Well, then you look at the starter market, and I look at FHA as such a critical component to really helping for the first-time home buyer. They were designed for that originally. And we look at the recent testifying that David Stevens did last week. I'd like to get your perspective on it. Alice reported a little bit about that. Not reported, she gave us some comments on what she had heard and read. I'd love to get a deeper insights from your perspective on Stevens' comments specifically, and just really the whole attitude in D.C., about FHA, and do we have to worry that something draconian is happening there.
Well, I didn't hear Stephen's comments live. I read some of his testimony. Everyone knows he's a former FHA commissioner, you know, and he helped, you know, write that chip, so to speak. You know, there's a lot of schools of thought about, you know, is FHA in the red? Are they really in the red? Are they going to need a federal bailout, et cetera, et cetera? And, you know, I've looked at the numbers and I've interviewed a lot of people. You know, it's all about cash flow. I mean, the last numbers I saw, they had something like $25, $28 billion in cash to pay claims.
Right.
You know, when people talk about FHA being in the red, it basically means you look at their potential losses over the next 5 or 10 years, and do they have enough cash to pay off on based on present value accounting? And the short answer is, yeah, it looks like they have plenty of cash as long as they don't get swamped by claims. You know, I think last year, what's the number we saw? They paid $4 or $5 billion in claims.
Right.
And even if claims double to $10 billion in this year, which is possible, or even triple, they have $28 billion in cash set aside. So they have enough money to, you know, to pay claims. It's whether, you know, they can take in enough money in premiums going forward to fill the hole that could come. But, you know, with home values going up, you know, that's going to help bail them out because foreclosed homes can be sold at more money if it comes to that.
Yes.
Everyone knows, you know, FHA premiums have risen, so they're going to have more premium income coming in. But I guess the question is, have these premiums gone up so much that they're going to hurt FHA's business, meaning someone might just choose a Fannie Freddie loan and FHA starts to lose premium income? Go ahead.
I said I don't think that's going to break anyone's heart at FHA. It's kind of like they got to be careful.
No, listen,
FHA
has been upfront. They want to cede this business back to the private MIs. There's
exactly
nothing.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, and listen, the other story that John did a couple of weeks ago was, you know, about how the MIs are coming off a pretty good year.
Yeah.
That the industry's back, so to speak, though a lot of people wonder. You know, you look at MGIC, that, you know, they had a good week last week because I guess they're, you know, it looks like they're starting to turn the corner. But, you know, you have two new players in the MI business, one which is actively writing policies, Essent,
right,
and another one called National Mortgage, Inc.,
right,
run by Glenn Corso and some of his right former friends at PMI, and they have $500 million in backing behind them, and they're going to probably write their first policy in the next couple of weeks.
Yes.
You know, and then there's even talk that there's another player out there looking again in the industry. So, you know, it looks like the business is in pretty good shape. You know, FHA is not out of the woods yet, and as long as we don't have a recession and home prices don't collapse again, it looks like we'll be okay. But, it's all about getting people back to work. And the more people who are back to work, the more potential home buyers there are. And the other equation, of course, is rates. You know, as long as rates stay low, you know, we're going to have liquidity for these people.
Well, and that the FHA rate is so similar in most markets to the conventional. What I get such mixed feedback when you compare the numbers, PMI being the better deal and for most of your better credit score customers, but then there's this constant appraisal issue hanging over your
right
head with the mortgage insurance company. So it really varies by market on how the originators on the street feels to which is the better product and which is the path of least resistance they want to take.
Right. You know, we did a story last week that actually we'll probably put online tomorrow. You know, there's even the 80-10-10 loans are coming back.
Yeah.
There's a couple lenders maybe out there who are willing to make the second so they can avoid the PMI payment. So, you know, it looks like, you know, things are loosening up a little bit. I mean, no one's talking about 80-20 loans coming back, and hopefully that won't happen because that was a disaster product. You know, maybe for well-heeled people who are in the upper income brackets who, you know, are looking for a tax write-off and have a ton of stocks in their portfolio, getting an 80-20 loan through Merrill Lynch might seem like a safe bet. But that product's not going to come back to the overall market. So,
One of the things, you look at the MI, let's go back to that. Well, United Guarantee is one of our radio sponsors, and you look at that's a positive turnaround, what they've gone through. And then you see, I'm hearing now rumors or stories out, and I believe it's now confirmed that the old PMI is coming out as the Glenn Corso's old group, and a lot of that are re-emerging out of bankruptcy with some new investors. So they're coming back. So there is reason to be optimistic that we are going to see the private markets come back, specifically as you see the resurgence of some of the MI companies.
Well, just a correction. Glenn's with National MI, it's called.
That's right.
National
he's with
MI
National
is not,
MI.
Yeah, no. You're right. There was a different company bought what was left of PMI's credit union business.
Correct. That's right. Correct.
Right. Yeah, we wrote about that a couple of weeks ago, and there looks like they're cranking that up to serve the entire market.
That's right.
The other player
that we
talked about. You know, it looks like the MI business is in good shape because, you know, whatever happens to Fannie and Freddie, and that's something we could talk about as well, it looks like there is going to be a place in the world for all the MIs. So there's going to be a real need for private guarantors backing up this business. And, you know, there's all sorts of talk from Fannie and Freddie getting involved in risk-sharing structures, and a lot of the MIs have, you know, devoted or put out their desire to be, you know, involved in being guarantors on mortgage backs and other products. So, but meanwhile, look, Fannie and Freddie are now, you know, making money hand over fist. Freddie reported earnings of, I think it was like $4.5 billion for the fourth quarter. Fannie's might be out this week, and, you know, there's all sorts of whisper numbers about, you know, what Fannie's going to earn. One number I heard could be $7 or $8 billion, and that's in the fourth quarter alone.
Wow.
You know, these guys are back.
Yeah, I
know. All this talk about getting rid of them and you know, some people in Congress saying, you know, let's drive a stake through their hearts, and now they're making great money, partly because their books of business are so clean over the last 3 years. But, you know, a lot of the reserves they set aside for the enormous losses they thought they were going to get hit with, it turns out they don't need as much as they set aside. And meanwhile, they're still getting money from the industry through buybacks and indemnifications. So that's making their books look a lot better, too. So,
yeah, absolutely.
You know,
let's talk about Fannie and Freddie. What you guys write, you've been observing this one for years and years and years. What are you writing about right now and that you can share with us or that you've recently written about about the agencies?
Well, we've written a few things. One thing we wrote about that's in our newsletter called Inside the GSEs, Fannie and Freddie have been using a lot of due diligence contractors to do buyback work. And now that buybacks are starting to go down, you know, they're starting to cut back on some of the work, you know, these vendors have been doing, companies like Allen Hill and Clayton. They haven't cut all the contracts, but they've cut way back. Fannie's starting to do some due diligence reviews in-house. Another recent development with the GSEs is the fact that it looks like Fannie Mae is cranking up to do a non-performing loan auction, which could happen sometime in the next 8 weeks. You know, they're real fuzzy on a date. They've hired a loan advisory firm. I believe it's Milestone Advisors is going to be their investment banker. You know, Fannie and Freddie are sitting on $10, $20, $30, $40 billion in non-performing loans, whole loans that they bought out of their MBS trust. It's probably even more than that. It's probably $150 billion. You know, so at some point, you know, what are Fannie and Freddie going to do with these non-performing loans? And I guess the answer is it looks like they're going to auction off some of them. And then the people who buy these loans, what are they going to do with them, try and cure them or take them to foreclosure? So that could be a huge market over the next 2 or 3 years. So that's an interesting development that we wrote about recently as well.
The MBA published an alternative, the McGee's, is as our good friend Jay Brinkman refers to him as. I mean, do you see additional developments in addition to Fannie and Freddie happening, or now with this administration in place and them playing the role that they have, is there any room for any other entrants like a McGee or any other alternatives?
You know, that's a question that people just – I ask it. I talk about it with people all the time, and basically the bottom line is no one thinks anything's going to happen anytime soon in Washington with the way this administration gets along with Congress. I mean, I try not to be a political reporter, even though I'm in D.C. I try and cover markets more than I do politics, because I think markets are a lot more fun, M&A and warehousing, what the GSEs are up to and their products and all that. But let's face it, Congress hates Obama, and Obama doesn't get along with Congress, and then the Senate's caught in the middle, and the idea of a compromise on anything, even ordering, new water for the water cooler is, it's a joke. And people are frustrated, and elected officials are frustrated, and the electorate's frustrated. And it seems like, it's not so much about doing what's right. It's about winning votes, whether you're a Democrat or Republican. It's a very sad situation, and I'm 52 years old, and I've never seen anything like this.
I've
been in D.C. since 1990. It's awful. I mean, I don't see, they never agree on anything unless there's a gun to their head and the trigger's been cocked and the bullet's three quarters of the way down the chamber. It's awful.
It is.
I don't see these guys agreeing on anything, and to screw up everything, and it's not such a screw up. The whole debate, Fannie and Freddie are now earning money, and they're earning a lot of money. So how does someone come along and say, pull the plug on these guys?
Exactly right.
And mortgage bankers, whether they're Republican or Democrats, love the liquidity. I mean, there's a lot of guys who wish more of the jumbo business would migrate to the private sector, and I think it will, because, the Fannie and Freddie, we talked about FHA raising their premiums. Fannie and Freddie are raising G fees. And what's the average G fee now? It's 40 to 50 bips.
Yep.
So, there's a lot of guys, and I heard just last week, there's a lot of guys starting to look not at just the jumbo space, but the conforming conventional space, that maybe they can finally make enough money on securitizing conventional loans. That will be a really interesting development over the next year, if that in fact happens.
Well, that's
that's going to be dependent on where G fees go.
Yep.
So
that is going to be a big driver of that. But one of the questions I had for you is, what about the private markets? The fact that we have Lou Ranieri back in the market with New Penn Financial, and you get a chance to interview and talk to a lot of these guys. Where do you see the private markets, or when do you see the private markets coming back, and what are the drivers? The G fee, as you just said, is one of them. What else?
Well, I haven't talked to Lou in a while. He and I email each other once in a while, and I try to get an update on what New Penn is up to. It's at Shell Point. Shell Point is the shelf. New Penn's the mortgage banker in Pennsylvania. I have no idea what their volumes were, but when I interviewed the head of New Penn back in late in the fall, early winter, their volumes were doing fine. I think their jumbo business was decent, but they have yet to come to market. I mean, the jumbo market is still dominated by Credit Suisse and Redwood.
Right.
Chase, I think, is working on a bond that they're ready to come out with. There's a lot of money on the sidelines that are looking at, jumbo deals. I haven't yet heard solid names on conventional MBS. I've heard the rumors, but nothing that I could really report to your audience.
Right.
It's all going to depend, I think, on, rates, G fees, and risk profiles of the underwriter. The interesting development that we broke on Friday has to do with a company out in California called Citadel Servicing, run by a guy named Dan Pearl, who raised $200 million for non-prime lending. This is more of sort of on the subprime side, people with low FICOs but high equity, getting credit. And, Dan, I got to hand it to him, I've known him for years. He raised $200 million, and, one has raised that kind of money for non-prime lending in a long, long time. I know there's people who've tried, but it looks like he has commitments, his contracts are signed, and he's hiring people in Orange County, California to ramp up Citadel as a non-prime lender. Granted, $200 million is not a lot. I mean, especially in California, where he's going to make most of his first loans, can go pretty quick. But the fact that private money is backing what he's doing is probably a good sign for the non-prime business, and when I mean non-prime, I mean this is the non-prime of yesteryear,
right?
When before Wall Street got involved and turned it into the Frankenstein monster, where you didn't make 80-20 loans, where you did real underwriting on someone's file, where you had to prove that you could actually repay the loan. I mean, this
right.
is old style non-prime lending that households and associates and Ames used to do in the 1960s and 70s.
Did it for years and very successfully.
Very successful at it, did very well, and, you know, they made the loan and they serviced it themselves and they never securitized it. So that's the kind of lending that he plans on doing, at least initially, though I think down the road there'll be some securitization. So, and there's a lot of people who believe that model can still work and thrive, and given how tight underwriting is these days, I don't see why not. The question is dealing with the CFPB and making sure you're not in violation of, HOPA laws and that kind of thing and triggers
right.
and whether the paperwork is so onerous, whether it wipes out your profit margin.
Right.
So.
You wrote this morning in the imfnews.com blog, you wrote about Ocwen says its servicing costs for NMPLs is dirt cheap. And you put India
right.
question mark. There, we have a huge workforce overseas that's supporting our industry. Give some insights. I want to draw our listeners to go be sure to read that article. It's great.
Yeah, that's on imfnews.com. That's been a subject that's fascinated me for years, outsourcing of white-collar jobs. I mean,
yeah.
In the 70s
yeah.
and 80s, it was outsourcing blue-collar jobs to first Mexico and then China.
Yeah.
And to me, I come from a working-class background. My dad worked in a factory for 40 years, and I just hate to see it. I just think it's, bad for the economy. And any time I open my mouth and raise concerns, it's like, Paul, you don't understand. These guys don't want to do this work anyway. Let someone do it in China for $1 an hour.
Yeah.
Where's the workforce going to come from? You want to make mortgages and talk that way, that's fine. But, who are you going to make loans to, people in China or people in the U.S.? At some point, you got to ask yourself, you outsource enough jobs overseas, you're outsourcing your customers. I mean, I understand capitalism and lowest costs and this and that, but, someone's got to start a real debate on where you start to draw the line and how do you have a business model when, the guy at CVS is your mortgage customer making $8 an hour, and I shouldn't even use CVS, the drugstore, because now they're replacing cashiers with machines.
I noticed that.
So there's a whole bunch of stuff we could talk about. We could probably have a whole program based on, where the future customer is going to come from if you keep outsourcing jobs. And I understand the economics behind outsourcing, so but at some point you gotta answer the question, where's the future workforce going to come? Even if you're outsourcing software jobs to India or somewhere else, where does it end? I mean, reporter jobs have already been outsourced to India. I don't know, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing necessarily, but you have to say, where do we create new jobs?
We've got to create new jobs right here in the services industry. I thought the mortgage industry was a great place to do it, but I understand the arguments. Those that are doing it very effectively. There's large corporations that are sending jobs.
Right, and I don't know the numbers. I mean, in the story I wrote today about Ocwen, I think they have like 5,000 in India, and
right.
Homeward had a big workforce there, and they bought Homeward. I don't know how many other mortgage companies have workforce overseas. I think Wells might have some. GE obviously has been outsourcing call center jobs to India for years upon years, and
right.
They probably have some there. I don't know what the real number is. If Ocwen's got 5,000 and they're one of the top 10 servicers, I don't know what the other guys are doing. A lot of times they don't talk about it, won't admit it, and won't disclose it. Ocwen does. But they're also headquartered in the Cayman Islands or wherever they are, and for tax
yep.
purposes. So,
yep.
They have a whole policy about getting around U.S. laws to maximize profits. So, you
got
to hand it to them, I guess.
You do. But let's talk about with the minutes we have remaining, Paul. I want to talk about things that you're going to be writing about that encourage our audience to start connecting to and making this one of their primary sources for getting news. And again, we're talking, folks, at IMF, which stands for InsideMortgageFinanceNews.com. And, Paul, what are you going to be writing about to encourage our listeners to keep checking this out and drawing their attention to you and this site?
Well, I'll keep making snide comments about outsourcing jobs overseas. No, we're going to continue to cover, you know, things that I've specialized in years, mergers and acquisitions, servicing deals. I've covered that industry closely. So that's something I've always had a lot of fun and good sources in, and can and break stories while the other competitors don't even have a chance because they don't have the kind of sources that we have at Inside Mortgage Finance. We'll continue through John Bancroft and our staff here to, you know, look at the hard data coming out of the industry to see what the trends are in lending, servicing, delinquencies. One thing we're working on for this week, we're going to look at who's buying delinquent loans out of Ginnie Mae pools. You know, there's lots of talk that, you know, you could buy FHA loans that are delinquent out of Ginnie Mae pools, and presto changeo, you make your delinquency numbers look better. But then it causes a problem because suddenly you have a delinquent mortgage on your books.
Right.
And what do you do with that? Can you modify it, or does it have to go to foreclosure? So that's something we're going to look at. Stuff along those lines. We'll continue to, you know, follow the regulatory atmosphere with, you know, the QM, the QRM, that sort of stuff. I mean, that's huge. Servicing rules are new. So we'll continue to cover the regulatory waterfront, so to speak. You know, non-performing loan auctions, I talked about that earlier, Fannie
right.
and Freddie. That's a huge story, I think. You know, one thing that we've always specialized in, and I've had good luck with my sources, is finding out who's leaving, who is some of the top executives that bolt from the top firms and wind up at new companies or wind up starting their own companies. We had one today. We had a good story that no one else had about GMH Mortgage in Pennsylvania
right.
hiring a former top executive, Frank DeMaio, out of GMAC.
Yeah.
I mean, that was an interesting change.
Yeah, I thought it was great.
And there's a few more of those coming out there. GMAC had a lot of top talent, and they opted not to go over to GreenTree.
Yep.
And some of those people are going to be landing. And, you know, we have another publication called Inside Mortgage Trends, and we have some stories there about recruiting and hiring. I mean, there's a lot of recruiting going on despite the fact that it looks like loan volumes are going to drop by maybe 15% this year. So it looks like that there's a lot of aggressive non-banks out there that are staffing up, and they feel that even though volumes might be off 15% this year, they'll be fine because the big boys are going to continue to cede business to the non-banks because, you know, they're worried about Basel III and servicing
yep.
and headcounts and take your pick. So that's some of the stuff we're working on.
Well, the way you've got the website organized, you have your main news items right down the middle of that, and then you have your topics off to the side. I mean, it's origination, servicing, secondary marketing, MBS, personnel, regulatory. I mean, there is a lot of information on this site. It's just something that I would encourage our listeners to go out and make this a part of your daily information gathering, and just check it out. Be sure to bookmark this page. You're going to want to do it. Paul, we appreciate you so much taking time.
Yeah.
And I know Guy keeps you busy around here following every story, and there's certainly a lot to be running down. So hopefully we're going to have you back on a very regular basis, giving
sure.
us some I'd love to have you back even just every broadcast, bringing just some data elements. Hey, look at the website. This is what we're covering today. Interesting news stories. It'd be great to have you back all the time. And be sure to greet John and Guy. I'd love to get John Bancroft on the broadcast one of these days to
sure.
talk about the analysis, because a lot of people look at that and they just don't appreciate all that goes into it. It's tremendous work and quite a lot of heavy lifting that he is doing there. So, Paul, appreciate it. Have yourself a great time up there in Bethesda. We appreciate
okay.
you taking time out of your busy day, and appreciate you being a part of the broadcast today.
Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
We'll have you back. I can promise you that. Thanks so much.
Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Folks, it's been good to have you with us again this week. Again, Andy Schell, the Profit Doctor, has been traveling, so we've had a few of them, missing a few. Next week, I'm on a spring break. I'm going to be out in Florida. We're going to be doing some traveling around the warmer climates. You know, say you live in Southern California. We live here in Central Texas. I said Southern California. Used to live there. It is one of those things where we really enjoy some great climate, but we're going to go enjoy some real fun. Alice Alvey will be hosting the broadcast next week. Appreciate you being a part of the broadcast. Be sure to tell others about the broadcast. and get the word out. We're here, mortgage professionals, reporting about what's going on in the mortgage industry. We're appreciating you for being a part of it. Have a great week, everybody, and we'll talk with you next week.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week and thank you for listening.